Welcome to In Our Community with host Penny Wolfgang every Saturday from 6 a.m. until 6:30 a.m. Judge Wolfgang talks about issues that are affecting your neighborhood. If you have a guest suggestion, call WECK during regular business hours at 716-783-9120. Now your host, Judge Penny Wolfgang.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to In Our Community. I'm your host, Penny Wolfgang, and we're here every week to talk about issues that concern all of us in Western New York as a public service in the interest of all of us in Western New York. And we always like to talk about, as I said, everything that has to do with our lives here, and also talk to anybody who has made an impact or who I thought you might like to know sometimes that you might not know about, a person that you might not know about. And that's what happened to me today. I was reading a story in Gusto not too long ago about a book concerning celebrating Buffalo's towering City Hall. And they had the most beautiful photographs in this story of our very own Buffalo City Hall. And not only the outside, but the stained glass windows inside and some of the art inside. And I thought, this is the most interesting, fascinating story about something that we take for granted, that we, something right here in front of our eyes, practically our whole lives, and we don't know anything about it. And that is City Hall. So it turns out that this book that we're going to be talking about today by our guest, author Drucker, is the first book to feature striking contemporary images of the most architecturally significant city halls in the United States, and including ours. So you know how, what do you call it, xenophobic we are here in Western New York? Anything that has to do with Buffalo or Western New York catches our attention right away. So I called and contacted Mr. Drucker, and he is here talking to us in the studio today via the miracle of Zoom technology and the miracle of Bobby, because it turns out he's actually in talking to us from California. Hi, how are you, Mr. Drucker? And thank you so much for joining us all the way from California. I don't know, even though this is the most magnificent book that I have seen author in I don't know how long, I don't know, in, even from the book, anything about you, how you, what your background is, and except as we found out before we went on the air, that both of us have something in common, that not coming from Buffalo or California, but actually growing up in the same neighborhood. But aside from that, what is your background that you came to take these fantastic photographs and write this book?
Well, first, thank you for inviting me on your show. To answer your question, I began as a photographer when I was a teenager, and I was always had an interest in architecture and history. I'm a bit of a history buff. So doing a book like this felt like second nature to me. And I live in the Bay Area, as you mentioned in your introduction, and San Francisco City Hall is just an absolute glorious building. And that was the original inspiration for the book. And I had published some books before and spoke to my book agent. And I said, you know, I'm going to do some research about city halls around the country and see what other interesting city halls there are, and came up with a list. And Buffalo was immediately on the list after doing the research. And long story short, 5 years later, the book in your hands appeared.
Not by magic, obviously by a lot of hard work. So this is really a dumb question, but you had to come here to take these photographs, right?
Yes.
In real life. Okay. And yes, to all the other places, that
correct,
the other city halls. You know, what I really find so amazing is the fact that each of the city halls that you chose has such significant, a historical significance to each of the places where they're represented, which they represent. And I never thought, and I guess you did studying history, that the city halls would have so much impact or so much to say about the area where they are located.
Yes. In fact, one of my criteria for selecting the city halls to be in the book was not only that they'd be architecturally distinctive, but also the story of how they came to be. be an interesting story that people might have interest in. And Buffalo, in addition to being a spectacular building, also has an interesting story. The building was built basically to commemorate the city's centennial in 1932, which was during the Depression. And the fact that the city committed to celebrating its centennial by creating this building was a real affirmation. And some of the people I interviewed spoke to that point. Apparently at the time, there was Mayor Schwab in Buffalo, and the building at the time was considered very costly, and it was called Schwab's Folly. It cost about the same amount of money to build Buffalo City Hall as it did the Empire State Building, but it really has stood the test of time. It is a spectacular building, and the fact that it rose during the Great Depression, I think, is a wonderful affirmation for the city and the people of Buffalo.
And you call it, very interestingly, because as the history goes on that we're talking about, they call it an American-esque building. How did you come up with that, or who came up with that?
Okay, I did not come up with that. That term came from the architect, John Wade, who at the time was a very young, bold architect who had very clear ideas about what civic architecture should be. And he was a big advocate for not using architectural references to the past. The default architecture for most civic buildings in America is neoclassic, you know, Greco-Roman. And he, like some other architects at the time, felt like that's an architecture of the past. We're America. We're a forward-looking country. Our architecture, our civic buildings should reflect things that are uniquely American. And hence, he came up with the term or the style for Buffalo City Hall as American-esque. And that term was used by John Conlon, who's a local Buffalo architectural historian who wrote a wonderful little book about Buffalo City Hall, which was great source material for me when I was working on my book. I actually got to interview him, and he called his book An American-esque Building about Buffalo City Hall. So it's a wonderful phrase, and it would have been dereliction of duty not to include it in my book as well.
And as far as the what is included in the architecture, in the building itself, people are not aware of the fact that, for example, there are these beautiful paintings, there are these beautiful murals, then particularly having to do with our Native American history, which is very, very important here in Western New York.
Yes, that was a definite goal. A design goal of John Wade, that he wanted the look and the feel and the design of the building to reflect local history. And for example, in the lobby of Buffalo City Hall, which is just an extraordinary space, if you look up at the vaulted ceiling and you see these painted tiles, those aren't just random designs. Those are based on designs and patterns created by Native Americans in what we now call Western New York. So the Native American aesthetic is embedded in the building, and they are juxtaposed with murals by John Lefkowitz Dodge, who was this wonderful mural artist during the Depression, who created these murals that celebrate Buffalo area industries and also Buffalo's closeness to the Canadian border and how important that is and was in the growth of the city.
Funny you mentioned how in a lot of the city halls, people just come, let's say tourists or students, and they just take the ride and go to the top or walk to the top and for the view, as opposed to going and looking at the various, you know, the buildings, the council chambers inside the building. And then they're really missing a lot. And not only, especially in Buffalo, especially here, because we get a beautiful view when people do go to the top. But yes. For another example, I didn't even think about the fact that they have this beautiful stained glass skylight which was designed by John Wade and his partner. And there was it illuminates the Common Council chamber, but according to your book, it symbolizes transparency in government. And so it has a meaning to it.
Yes. In fact, one of the sub-themes of the book is how this idea of transparency in government plays out in the design of the various city halls. When it comes to Buffalo City Hall, as you mentioned, that wonderful skylight above the Common Council chamber, it's a stained glass window designed by John Wade and his partner. And just as a piece of stained glass, it's a beautiful piece of art. But the fact that it takes up much of the ceiling of the Common Council chamber and allows for daylight to come through, that was symbolic of this notion of transparency in government. And on a bright, sunny day, you don't even need electric lights on in the building. The sunlight is enough to illuminate it. And it's a wonderful quality of light filtered through those, you know, orange and red and yellow stained glass pieces. So that helps make, I say in the book that the Common Council Chamber in Buffalo City Hall, I find to be maybe the most intriguing legislative space in American civic architecture. It is really spectacular, and it's worth visiting even when the council is not in session.
And especially when
there you go, exactly.
Let's rephrase that.
Right.
You know,
yes.
It's just all that you've told us so far is another example of how, not only in Buffalo, but I think in all of the different places that you chose to talk about the city hall, the people take the citizens take for granted. I think they take it for granted. Nobody has realized or thought about the fact, the history of how how the city halls here as well as other places came to be built, why they're built there, what architect they use. The citizens take it for granted, but it speaks about the area very well. The city hall always speaks about the area.
Those are the best city halls because, quite honestly, when I was doing my research to select the city halls to be in the book, honestly, a lot of city halls around the country use that neoclassical style, which, as I mentioned earlier, is that default style for American civic architecture. And I was really looking to avoid sameness. It'd be kind of a bore to thumb through the book and all you see are columns and that sort of thing. And so it was important for me to select very distinctive city halls that really stood out, that deserve to be visited in their own right, not just because we have to go there to pull permits or attend a hearing or go to vote or something like that.
Yeah, I know when you mentioned that, when you think about City Hall, very often you think about negative things, you know, like you have to go pay a fine or a parking ticket or, I don't know, something negative, and you don't think about how really how really gorgeous it is.
Yes, I have to say, before I worked on this book, I was like a lot of people. I took city halls for granted. I know they provide essential services, but, like you said, it's sometimes there's negative connotations. You can't fight City Hall.
Oh, right.
And that sort of thing. And there is some truth to that. But I have to say, among the people I interviewed in Buffalo was Mayor Brown. And he was very generous with his time. I interviewed him in his office, and he spoke very eloquently about the importance of local government, especially in, shall we say, our fraught political moment where there's a lot of polarization and hyperpartisanship. And increasingly, and this has been borne out by polls, that most people look to local government to really get things done. Because at the local level, if you want to see your constituents, all you have to do is look out your window. It's the most direct form of democracy. So there's no time really for political posturing, whether it's to fill potholes or try and do your best to contain a pandemic. And Mayor Brown spoke, I quote him in my introduction to the book. He was wonderful talking about the importance of local government, and local government is City Hall. So this book, in addition to being a celebration of civic architecture, is really a celebration of American democracy at its best, quite frankly.
And it is. I just can't rave about it enough for anybody. We're going to tell them how they can get it in a minute. I just want to interrupt and tell everyone you are listening to in our community on WEC Radio. And we are talking to Arthur Drucker, who is the author of a book that we are really, really crazy about. And it's called A City Hall. Simply City Hall, which explains what it's about perfectly. But, you know, I don't want to criticize you, of course, and I'm not. However,
you're a judge.
However, yes, but not of architecture or history. Uh-huh. And so, but I will say that I guess I'm maybe biased in a way. Love like our City Hall, the City Hall in New York City, for example. But some of the ones that you chose. Although I know you can explain that they have something to do with expressing the area itself, are so modern and so different that I don't think of them as, they're just not traditional city halls to anybody's way of thinking.
Yes, and I'm glad you pointed it out. I don't take it as a criticism at all. In fact, I take it as a compliment, quite frankly, because I really wanted to show the range of civic architecture in America, and city halls are the best examples of civic architecture to show that kind of range. So the book starts with New York City Hall, which opened for business in 1812, and it ends with Las Vegas City Hall, which opened in 2012. And it's organized chronologically, so you see a 200-year arc of American civic architecture. And as you mentioned, later in the book, it gets more modern, less traditional. And there were some city halls that, while honestly, they might not have been personal favorites, again, it would have been dereliction of duty not to include them because they are important architecturally. And I'm really referring mostly to Boston City Hall, which is that brutalist style of architecture, which was very popular in the late 60s, early 70s, which is very heavy on the concrete. There's nothing warm and fuzzy about it. But when you realize the historical context of how that building came to be, you understand why it is the way it is, and you appreciate it for what it is. And in its own way, it expresses transparency in government, because it came about just after a notoriously corrupt, a politically corrupt era in Boston politics. And the city fathers, shall we say, really were intent on changing the whole vibe in Boston. They wanted to make it transparent, open, democratic. We're open for business. We were open to new ideas. And brutalism was the current style of architecture at the time. And that was the way for Boston to say, hey, we're not some old colonial relic. We're a here and now city. You know, we're open to new ideas. So while it may be harsh to look at the time in context, it was new, it was open, and it represented, here we are, come in, we have nothing to hide. You know, please be a part of the city.
And it definitely does not look like a prison. That's a question. I really think it looks like a prison. I'm sorry.
Well,
Maybe that's just me. You know, it's on my mind.
Yes, I understand your response, and a lot of people share that response to the building.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, in historical context, it's considered a lot of architects and architectural organizations think it's one of the most important buildings in America, honestly.
And also, it's named Brutalist for it fits the name. Okay,
yeah.
You know,
yes.
Speaking of something new under the sun, I think the places that are so beautiful that you mentioned, that you talked about, they are more modern but still beautiful, which I think has something to do also with the location itself. For example, I was looking at Palm Springs City Hall, and I'm thinking, oh, I wish I lived there. It's so beautiful. And
yes,
and the same, even though it's more modern, the same with the City Hall. It sort of reflects the area geographically.
Yes. Well, Palm Springs, to me, that was a fun inclusion in the book, because Palm Springs, relative to other cities represented in the book, it's a rather small city. But Palm Springs is also known for its architecture, particularly, you know, the mid-century modernism. And its city hall was designed by Albert Frey, who's considered the father, shall we say, of mid-century modernism. And that is very much part of Palm Springs' identity. And as you say, the building reflects the city. And even in his choice of materials, the fact that it's a low-lying building, the fact that there's, you know, a fair amount of glass in it to, again, bring in the outside inside. This is all part of Palm Springs' mid-century modernism. So the building fits in and exemplifies the style of Palm Springs, very much so.
And the same, I guess, with Austin, because I think of Texas, you know, when I see it, when I saw it, I thought, this is Texas, you know, in my mind.
Well, specifically, it's Austin, because Austin has a very popular motto, which is keep Austin weird. And the architect, Antoine Pradock, he was intent on capturing the spirit of Austin in the building. And there's no other city hall in this country, maybe in the world, quite like Austin City Hall. And he really invited feedback from Austinites. He really wanted to make it an extremely democratic process to get local feedback, what people wanted in their city hall. And the building completely, inside and out, reflects what Austinites wanted in their building.
Now, I've never been to many of the places that we talked about, that you talked about in the book. And if I ever go there, I definitely would immediately go and look at the City Hall. However, you mentioned this before, and I'm sure people would be interested in it. I don't know how many times, I bet our listeners have been to Las Vegas. And I bet you, I wish it was a call-in program. I bet you, like, nobody to 1% or less have ever gone to the City Hall. Or looked right at the City Hall, or knew there was a City Hall. So, well, but I think, yeah, I wanted you to tell, that was the most interesting story, I think, one of the most interesting about how this City Hall in Las Vegas got to be built, and that it's pretty new.
Yes. Well, the reason why I would say a lot of tourists wouldn't be looking at Las Vegas City Hall is that it's not located on the Strip. It's a few miles away in what's known as the old downtown, the original downtown. So if you're a tourist to Las Vegas, honestly, there's not a whole lot of reason to go in the old downtown, although it's close to Fremont Street, which was the old gambling area. But one of the reasons why I included Las Vegas City Hall, well, first off, it was the most recent one to include in the book. So it was, like I said earlier, it opened in 2012. But also I thought it was a great example of what I would call casting against type. When you think of Las Vegas in general, you think of, you know, glitzy and maybe a little bit tacky and that sort of thing. But Las Vegas City Hall is a very sleek, modern building with a very interesting design aesthetic. And the force behind the creation of that building was Mayor Oscar Goodman, who was quite a charismatic character. If anybody out there saw the movie Casino, he played himself in the movie.
Yes.
As a lawyer, because before he became mayor, he was a very famous attorney who made his reputation representing, let's call it what it is, mob figures. And he represented the Robert De Niro character in the movie Casino. So if you see the movie Casino in those courtroom scenes, there's Oscar Goodman sitting next to Robert De Niro.
We're all going to get that on YouTube as soon as this show is over.
And anyway, so when he you know, he felt like he had done what he had done or could do as an attorney, he was looking for a new challenge. He decided to run for mayor. He was a very honest, plain-spoken guy. He won in a landslide. And one of the things he really wanted to do was revitalize the original downtown, which, as I said, is about a mile or so away from the Strip where most people go. And he was very forward thinking. He said, I want a diverse, an architecturally diverse rejuvenation of old downtown, which in part was, quite frankly, kind of run down. And the centerpiece was going to be a new city hall, because the old city hall was a brutalist building built in the 70s. And he wanted something that was more open and inviting. So he commissioned Elkis Manfredi Architects, this architectural firm in Boston, to build the building that became Las Vegas City Hall, which is very open, inviting, and it is the centerpiece of a really beautifully redeveloped area that is still being redeveloped. And the building itself is a visual design metaphor for the natural resources that made Las Vegas possible. So the building is a three-dimensional symbol that celebrates not only the city, but what made the city possible, which was the natural resources, whether it was the underwater springs that provided water as a resource or sun for solar power. And it's all there in the visual design of the building.
And also, as you mentioned, it has a lot to do with energy and with
yes.
The desert and with water and with natural resources, which,
yes.
I don't know, we usually don't realize or think about, Las Vegas with the desert and water and all of the symbolism that that has to do with, as you said, when we usually think about gambling or,
Exactly.
Yeah, or
exactly.
artificial lights and so forth. Now, this right. book is not only beautiful and meaningful, but it weighs 4,000. It weighs more than I do. Okay, so how is almost? How are our listeners, going to find, or where are they going to find City Hall by Arthur Drucker?
They can go, if not their local bookstore, they could easily go to the publisher website, which is schifferpublishing.com. S-C-H-I-F-F-E-R. Publishing.com or Amazon, or if they want a signed copy of the book, they can go to my website, arthurdrucker.com, A-R-T-H-U-R, D as in David, R-O-O-K-E-R.com.
And I assure you, and all of my listeners and our listeners as well on WEC Radio, that it would be a treat for anybody to learn and to look through, and just beautiful to have to show to other people. I think this would be, I'm sure you've thought of that, anybody studying architecture or any school or any, higher education where architects, wherever they go to learn, they really should see this book or have this book.
Yes, thanks for saying that. Yes, I meant it for not just architects and historians, but for people who just have an interest in photography, architecture, history, their local history. I really wanted to make this accessible to all kinds of people. You don't have to be an architecture expert at all to really understand or appreciate this book. It's very accessible to everybody.
Well, I just loved it, and I'm so glad I got an opportunity to talk to you, and I'm so glad, even though you're 1,000,000,000 miles away from us, that it seems like you're just right here in the studio. So
yeah.
Thanks so much, and thank you, everybody, for listening to In Our Community with your host, Penny Wolfgang, on WECK WEC Radio. We are here every week at this time, and we hope you will join us again very soon. Have a good week. Thank you very much, Mr. Drucker, and goodbye, everybody.
You've been listening to In Our Community with host Penny Wolfgang. Every Saturday from 6 a.m. until 6:30 a.m., Judge Wolfgang talks about issues that are affecting your neighborhood. If you have a guest suggestion, call WECK during regular business hours at 716-783-9120. To listen to a podcast of this show, go online to wecbuffalo.com.